We come again now to John Flavel's The Mystery of Providence, and we're at the first general head, and this is on page 351 of volume 4 of his collected works. And in this first general heading, he is defending the great truth of providence, and particularly now against those who seek to rationalize the doctrine. And he has 8 demands. We are going to read the first 4, which are found on page 351 to 356. So Flavel writes, first demand: how comes it to pass that so many signal mercies and deliverances have befallen the people of God above the power and against the course of natural causes, to make way for which there hath been a sensible suspension and stop put to the course of nature? It is most evident that no natural effect can exceed the power of its natural cause. Nothing can give to another more than it hath in itself, and it is as clear that whatsoever acts naturally acts necessarily. Fire burns to the uttermost of its power. Waters overflow and drown all that they can. Lions and other rapacious and cruel beasts, especially when hungry, tear and devour their prey. And for arbitrary and rational agents, they also act according to the principles and laws of their natures. A wicked man, when his heart is fully set in him, and his will stands in a full bent of resolution, will certainly, if he have power in his hand and opportunity to execute his conceived mischief, give it vent and perpetuate the wicked devices of his heart. For having once conceived mischief and travailing in pain with it according to the course of nature, he must bring it forth, as it is in Psalm 7, verse 14. But if any of these inanimate, brutal, or rational agents, when there is no natural obstacle or remora, have their power suspended, and that when the effect is near the birth and the design at the very article of execution, so that though they would, yet cannot hurt, to what, think you, is this to be assigned and referred? Yet so it hath often been seen, where God's interest hath been immediately concerned in the danger and evil of the event. The sea divided itself in its own channel and made a wall of water on each side to give God's distressed Israel a safe passage, and that not in a calm, but when the waves thereof roared, as it is in Isaiah 51:15. The fire, when blown up to the most intense and vehement flame, had no power to singe one hair of God's faithful witnesses, when at the same instant it had power to destroy their intended executioners at a greater distance, Daniel 3:22. Yea, we find it hath some time been sufficient to consume, but not to torment the body, as in that known instance of blessed Bincham, who told his enemies that flames were to him as a bed of roses. The hungry lions put off their natural fierceness and became gentle and harmless when Daniel was cast among them for a prey. The like account of the church story gives us of Polycarp and Dionysius Areopagita, whom the fire would not touch, but stood after the manner of a ship's sail, filled with the wind about them. Are these things according to the course and law of nature? To what secret and natural cause can they be ascribed? In like manner, we find the vilest and fiercest of wicked men have been withheld by an invisible hand of restraint from injuring the Lord's people. By what secret cause in nature was Jeroboam's hand dried up and made inflexible at the same instant it was stretched out against the man of God? 1 Kings 13:4. No wild beasts rend and devour their prey more greedily than wicked men would destroy the people of God that dwell among them, were it not for this providential restraint upon them. So the psalmist expresses his case in the words following my text: "My soul is among lions, and I lie among them that are set on fire. The disciples were sent forth as sheep in the midst of wolves." Matthew 10:16. It will not avail in this case to object those miraculous events depend only upon scripture testimony, which the atheist is not concluded by. For besides all that may be alleged for the authority of that testimony, which is needless to produce to men that own it, what is it less than every eye sees or may see at this day? Do we not behold a weak, defenceless handful of men wonderfully and, except this way, unaccountably preserved from ruin in the midst of potent, enraged, and turbulent enemies that fain would but cannot destroy them, when as yet no natural impediment can be assigned why they cannot? And if this poses, what shall we say when we see events produced in the world for the good of God's chosen by those very hands and means which were intentionally employed for their ruin? These things are as much beside the intentions of their enemies as they are above their own expectations. Yet such things are no rarities in the world. Was not the envy of Joseph's brethren the cursed plot of Haman, and the decree procured by the envy of the princes against Daniel, with many more of the like nature, all turned by a secret and strange hand of providence to their greater advancement and benefit? Their enemies lifted them up to all that honour and preferment they had. Second demand. How is it, if the saints' concerns are not ordered by a special divine providence, that natural causes unite and associate themselves for their relief and benefit in so strange a manner as they are found to do? It is undeniably evident that there are marvellous coincidences of providence, confederating and agreeing, as it were, to meet and unite themselves to bring about the good of God's chosen. There is a like face of things showing itself in diverse places at that time when any work for the good of the church is come upon the stage of the world, as when the Messiah, the capital Mercy, came to the temple. Then Simeon and Anna were brought thither by providence as witnesses to it. So in Reformation work, when the images were pulled down in Holland, one and the same spirit of zeal possessed them in every city and town, that the work was done in a night. He that heedfully reads the history of Joseph's advancement to be Lord of Egypt may number in that story 12 remarkable acts or steps of providence by which he ascended to that honour and authority. If but one of them had failed, in all likelihood the event had done so too. But every one fell in its order, exactly keeping its own time and place. So in the church's deliverance from the plot of Haman, we find no less than 7 acts of providence concurring strangely to produce it, as if they had all met by appointment and consent to break that snare for them, one thing so aptly suiting with and making way for another, that every heedful observer must needs conclude this cannot be the effect of causality, but wise counsel. Even as in viewing the accurate structure of the body of a man, the figure, position, and mutual respects of the several members and vessels have convinced some and is sufficient to convince all that it was the effect of divine wisdom and power. In like manner, if the admirable adapting of the means and instruments employed for mercy to the people of God be heedfully considered, who can but confess that as there are tools of all sorts and sizes in the shop of providence, so there is a most skilful hand that uses them, and that they could no more produce such effects of themselves than the axe, saw, or chisel can cut or carve a rude log into a beautiful figure without the hand of a skillful artificer. We find by manifold instances that there are certainly are strong combinations and predispositions of persons and things to bring about some issue and design for the benefit of the church, which themselves never thought of. They had no intelligence, communicate not their counsels to each other, yet meet together and work together as if they did, which is as if 10 men should all meet together at one place and in 1 hour about one and the same business, and that without any foreappointment betwixt themselves can any question but such a meeting of means and instruments is certainly, though secretly, overruled by some wise invisible agent. Third demand. If the concerns of God's people be not governed by a special providence, whence is it that the most apt and powerful means employed to destroy them are rendered ineffectual and weak, and contemptible means employed for their defence and comfort crowned with success? This could never be if things were wholly swayed by the course of nature. If we judge by that rule, we must conclude the more apt and powerful the means are, the more successful and prosperous they must needs be. And where they are inept, weak, and contemptible, nothing can be expected from them. Thus, reason lays it according to the rules of nature, but providence crosses its hands, as Jacob did in blessing the sons of Joseph, and orders quite contrary issues and events. Such was the mighty power and deep policy used by Pharaoh to destroy God's Israel, that to the eye of reason it was as impossible to survive it as for crackling thorns to abide unconsumed amidst devouring flames, by which emblem their miraculous preservation is expressed. Exodus 3:2. The bush was all in a flame, but no consumption of it. The heathen Roman emperors who made the world tremble and subdued the nations under them have employed all their power and policy against the poor, naked, defenceless church to ruin it, yet could not accomplish it. Revelation 12:3-4. Oh, the seas of blood that heathen Rome shed in 10 persecutions, yet the church lives. And when the dragon gave his power to the beast, Revelation 13:2, i.e. the state of Rome became anti-Christian, oh, what slaughters have been made by the beast in all his dominions, so that the Holy Ghost represents him as drunken with the blood of the saints, Revelation 17:6. And yet all will not do. The gates, i.e. the powers and policies of hell, cannot prevail against it. How manifest is the care and power of providence herein. Had half that power been employed against any other people, it had certainly swallowed them up immediately, or in the 100th part of this time worn them out. How soon was the Persian monarchy swallowed up by the Grecian, and that again by the Roman? Diocletian and Maximian, in the height of their persecution, found themselves so baffled by providence that they both resigned the government and lived as private men. But in this wonderful preservation, God makes good that promise, Jeremiah 30:11, though I make a full end of all nations, yet will I not make a full end of thee. And that in Isaiah 54:17, no weapon formed against thee shall prosper. On the contrary, how successful have weak and contemptible means been made for the good of the church. Thus, in the first planting of Christianity in the world, by what weak and contemptible instruments was it done? Christ did not choose the eloquent orators or men of authority in the courts of kings and emperors, but 12 poor mechanics and fishermen. And these not sent together in a troop, but some to take one country to conquer it and some another. The most ridiculous course in appearance for such a design as could be imagined. And yet in how short a time was the gospel spread and the churches planted by them in the several kingdoms of the world. This the psalmist foresaw by the spirit of prophecy, when he said, "Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength, to still the enemy and the avenger." Psalm 8:2. At the sound of ram's horns, Jericho is delivered into the hands of Israel, Joshua 6:20, by 300 men with their pitchers and lamps. The huge host of Midian is discomfited, Judges 6:19. The Protestants besieged in Béziers in France are delivered by a drunken drummer who, going to his quarters at midnight, rang the alarm bell of the town, not knowing what he did, and just when were their enemies making the assault. And as weak and implorable means have been blessed with success to the church in general, so to the preservation of its particular members also. A spider, by weaving her web over the mouth of an oven, shall hide a servant of Christ, de Moulin, from his enemies, who took refuge there in the bloody partisan massacre. A hen shall sustain another many days, at the same time by lodging her egg every day in the place where he had hid himself from the cutthroats. Examples might be easily multiplied in the case, but the truth is too plain and obvious to the observation of all ages to need them. And can we but acknowledge a divine and special providence overruling these matters when we see the most apt and potent means for the church's ruin frustrated, and the most silly and contemptible means succeeded and prospered for its good? Fourth demand. If all things be governed by the course of nature and force of natural causes, how then comes it to pass that men are turned like a bowl of rub out of the way of evil unto which they were driving on with full speed? Good men have been engaged in the way to their own ruin and knew it not, but providence hath met them in the way and preserved them by strange diversions, the meaning of which they understood not until the event discovered it. Paul lay bound at Caesarea. The high priest and chief of the Jews request Festus that he might be brought bound to Jerusalem, having laid wait in the way to kill him. But Festus, though ignorant of the plot, utterly refuses it, but chooses rather to go with him to Caesarea and judge him there. By this rub, their bloody design is frustrated. Acts 25:3-4. Posidonius, in the life of Augustine, tells us that the good father, going to teach the people of a certain town, took a guide with him to show him the way. The guide mistook the usual route and ignorantly fell into a bypath, by which means he escaped ruin by the hands of the bloody Donatist, who, knowing his intention, waylaid him to kill him in the road. As memorable and wonderful are these rubs and diversions wicked men have met with in the way of perpetuating the evils conceived and intended in their own hearts. Laban and Esau come against Jacob with mischievous purposes, but no sooner are they come nigh him, but the shackles of restraint are immediately clapped upon them both, so that their hands cannot perform their enterprises. Balaam runs greedily for reward to curse Israel, but meets with an unexpected check at his very outset, and though that stops him not, but he essayed every way to do them mischief, yet he still finds himself fettered by an effectual bond of restraint that he can no way shake off. Numbers 22:25-38. Saul, the high priest's bloodhound, breathes out threatenings against the church, and goes with a bloody commission towards Damascus to hale the poor flock of Christ to the slaughter. But when he comes nigh the place, he meets an unexpected stop in the way, by which the mischief is not only diverted, but himself converted to Christ. Acts 9:1-4. Who can but see the finger of God in these things? And we'll end our reading there.